In the meantime, let me thank the organizers for the kind invitation. And are we ready? Oh, yeah. Really? Okay. All right. All right. Let me start anyway by saying that the purpose of what I'm about to talk is the protection of arbitrary, if you like, multipartite entangled states from decoherence, from all sources of decoherence. And this, I will show, can be formulated in terms of a rather universal recipe. So this is the main message of the talk. Most of the talk, most of the work has been done by Goran Gordon, who is a first year PhD student working with me. That is the part related to multipartite states. Okay. Right. So we've done that. And this is the synopsis. All right, so what we currently have is mainly... This is not working? Oh, this may be. What we currently have is mainly error correction to take care of the multipartite decoherence. See, talking about error correction. All right. Thank you. And, of course, this has its own problems, but mainly I simply dislike it. Okay? And I got into terrible trouble with the Laflamme, implying that there is something unpleasant about error correction. All right, but I hope I'm here at the liberty to say that. What I'll be talking about is much closer in spirit to dynamical decoupling and decoherence-free subspaces, and two of the protagonists are here. So we've heard a lot about that. The proposal we make is for universal dynamical control that can relax the requirements needed for these two mechanisms to work. Namely, you don't necessarily need the kind of stroboscopic evolution that that Lorenzo was talking about, and you can live with asymmetric coupling of many particles to a bath or to a source noise, which normally impedes decoherence-free subspaces. And then will define the ultimate goal of this exercise. Hopefully we can do without error correction at all. This is sacrilege, but I stick my head out that, all right? So, single particle decoherence is, of course, the simplest version. Imagine an ensemble of particles all coupled in the same way to the environment, namely ions in an ion trap that are subject to fluctuating external fields. That's proper dephasing for you, or pure dephasing. Ions or atoms in a cavity that can couple to both phonon and photon modes. And their analogs in Josephson junctions that we've heard a lot about. And I recommend this paper of ours that deals with Josephson junctions. Okay. We have come up with formulation, which we call the universal formulation of single particle decoherence control in this series of papers. And you see here on both sides the analogy between the treatment of two sources of decoherence. Okay? On the left, you see what happens when the dominant source of decoherence is the coupling to a zero-temperature bath by means of an off-diagonal Hamiltonian that entangles the state of the system with the state of the bath that were initially factorized. And this entanglement, of course, leads to a decrease of the fidelity of the overlap between the initial and the evolving state of the system after you project out the bath. And this is governed by this non-exponential decay, where J is an overlap of two functions. One, this red function, is the spectrum of the coupling to the reservoir, or the spectrum of the reservoir or bath response, which is the product of the density of the modes of the bath times the matrix element squared, evaluated at all energies, okay? And this green function, it's not the Green's function, it's a green function, that's the spectrum of the modulation which we introduce in order to control this J, all right? And our objective is to suppress it, in other words, to make this overlap as small as possible, desirably zero, okay? Now, since you may not be familiar with this formulation or with this result, I've copied here the main results of this paper. There you can find the other details, but look at the Hamiltonian first. The Hamiltonian consists of the parts pertaining to the system, okay, and this part, it's sigma z, it's diagonal polymatrix part, may contain this fluctuating frequency, a randomly fluctuating frequency, that would be a source of dephasing, okay? And if that is your problem, then you would control that by adding this time-dependent term, where omega of t is a time-dependent Rabi frequency, and sigma x is the appropriate Pauli matrix, okay? So this is your control in case you have dephasing. It's near resonant driving of your qubit, okay, by means of this field. If, on the other hand, your main source of decoherence is due to an off-diagonal coupling to the bath, off-diagonal because, you see, it's affected by this sigma of x, this Pauli matrix, and this B is a bath operator, and it can be either linear or quadratic as in your case, and then you would control it by means of this function epsilon of t, which is an off-resonant modulation of the energy of the system. In fact, an AC star shift that depends on time. So you have either this control or that control. Now, it may happen that you have both, okay? If you have both, things become much more complicated. We have solved that, but you really don't want to see the result. Okay, it doesn't bring qualitatively anything new, all right? So let's concentrate on that, all right? So as I was saying, if this is your source of decoherence, then you are trying to control this overlap between the spectrum of the off-resonant modulation of your level and the coupling spectrum to your reservoir. And if, on the other hand, you have mainly proper dephasing to worry about, then you employ a resonant modulation, this modulation, and then the dephasing rate, and this is why we insist that this is a universal formulation, looks exactly the same, okay? It's the overlap of the spectrum of the dephasing cross-correlation or correlation function. See the cross-correlation between the fluctuating frequency at time t and at t equals zero. Yeah, so it's the convolution of that or the overlap of that function with the function which is obtained by taking the spectrum of the Rabi driving of the system. Okay, here you have a more detailed form of that. This is the dephasing rate written in terms of the overlap between the Fourier transform of this function, okay, just the cross-correlation between delta at different times, modulated by this exponential function, where in the exponent you have the Rabi frequency. So this is your control. Okay. Yes, please. No. This is, it's just a simplified form. What is written here, for example, is valid for arbitrary temperature. You don't need that. Furthermore, you may see there that the expressions which we have derived for the relaxation rates are valid not just at any temperature, but they are valid without the rotating wave approximation. So it's a very exact result. Okay. But anyway, so this is so what are the implications of that? The simplest you can think about is that you have such a spectrum of coupling to the bath, and hopefully it's understood that we are dealing with the strongly non-Markovian effects here, right? Because if you want the Markovian limit, you just take the delta function limit of phi. Yeah, I mean, right? If you go to the Markovian limit, you have no control. Okay, let's put it this way. All right, so it's necessarily non-Markovian. All right, so if you have such a spectrum of coupling to the bath, and again, the Markovian limit would mean that this spectrum is infinitely broad, is in frequency, white noise. Okay, this you cannot handle. All right, so you have that. And the relaxation rate is the overlap of this G function with this spectrum of modulation, okay, which is really a sum, a weighted sum of frequency shifts by an amount omega k, okay. This is a spectrum which you tailor, all right. Then what you conclude is that being close to one edge of this spectrum, what you need is optimally is modulation which consists of a series of small phase shifts. Okay, small phase shifts. This phi should be a small phase. All right. Because then you get a unidirectional shift towards the region where the density of states of the mode is zero, okay? Then the resulting rate of decay or decoherence is what you would have gotten by the golden rule if you had shifted the resonant frequency by an amount phi over tau, where tau is the interval between pulses and phi is the phase shift per pulse. Okay, that's in the case of non-resonant control that you employ to negate the effects of diagonal coupling to above. Okay, so phi over tau is the frequency shift which is associated with a phase shift phi, a kick, small, at an interval, at intervals tau.
And tau has to be pretty small.
That's right. Well, unless you are sufficiently close to the edge, okay? All right. But if in such a situation you just employ pi pulses, then you would have shifts in both directions, okay? This is just the Fourier transform of this function. The Fourier transform of this function with pi here shifts you in towards both negative and positive frequencies, yes? And that means that you will, with 50% probability, move in the desired direction of very low density of modes, but with 50% probability, you will move towards higher density of modes, which is bad for you, because, again, the effective rate is the overlap of the red and the green functions, okay? And here this overlap remains substantial, okay? So the advantage of thinking in terms of the overlap of these two functions is that you, looking at where you are located relative to the edge of the spectrum or some sort of dip in the spectrum, you know how to tailor your pulses to give you the optimal results. And this is, you may call it optimal control, but you can always estimate this by hand. It gives you simple insight. All right. So this is what you can do with a two-level single particle. A much tougher problem is the coherence control of a multipartite entangled state. For simplicity, a state in which one of the particles is in an excited state, okay, and the others are in the ground state, and this can be any of those particles, so you have all permutations to take into account. Now, this is here coupled to a bath, and as a result, it evolves into a superposition of a singly excited state, all the others being in the ground state, with some amplitude, with a set of amplitudes, J and N, because you now have N particles, and you may have J levels. It's not necessarily a two-level system. So this is one possibility, that you remain in this singly excited state, or you have decayed to the ground state and have excited a quantum K of the bath, a phonon or a photon or whatever, okay? So this is the general evolution. Of course, it can get more complicated, but in this singly excited entangled state, this is the general evolution. And this is this presents the following problem, or actually two problems. One is that the coupling of the individual particles to the bath may well be asymmetric. For example, some particles may be located near antinodes of a field mode to which they couple, and others at a node. So this is one problem, unequal couplings. The other problem is cross-decoherence or cross-coupling. In other words, one particle can emit a quantum into the bath, the other may reabsorb it, okay? And that's a commonly occurring situation, all right? So the question is whether in such a situation we can impose a decoherence-free subspace. That would be, of course, a very desirable goal. All right. The solution to this problem is given by this time-ordered exponential of a matrix. This is the decoherence matrix for such a general system. And first look at the diagonal elements of this matrix. They do not mix the amplitudes corresponding to the excitations of the individual particles. Yes, they don't do that, but they cause their relaxation. Yes, they cause their decay. Okay, these are the initial excitation amplitudes of a single particle. We are talking here about one of the particles being excited, either particle one or two or whatever. Or yeah. So these diagonal elements have an analogous form to what we saw for a single particle. They are given by the spectral overlap of this spectral bath response, but now with an index J and N, where J is the level number and N is the particle number. And you have here the square of the amplitude of the modulating field at the appropriate frequency, okay? This is, of course, directly analogous to what we had before, and since there are n, if you have n particles, there are n such diagonal elements, or if you have multiple levels, there can be 2n, 3n, etc. There is a fair possibility of controlling each of them individually by applying an appropriate field, okay? If you have n particles, in principle, you definitely can apply n fields to them, provided you have addressability. And now you have addressability already. This has become experimentally realistic. The more severe problem is with the off-diagonal elements. Okay, the elements which are associated with the cross decoherence I discussed before, one emitting a quantum, the other absorbing it from the bath, so it's cross coupling of the particles via the bath, and this involves a lot more elements. Yes, I mean, the number of these of diagonal elements is much larger than the number of diagonal elements. It's n times n plus 1 over 2, so of the order of n squared, if you have an n by n matrix, and they are all distance dependent, so how to control them? The good news is that now the phases of the modulating field come in, okay, you see, and we may take advantage of those. Okay, so one thing is clear, you cannot control such cross decoherence by means of a single field that you, no matter how complicated it is, a single field that is applied uniformly to all particles will never do that for you. Because cross decoherence arises in this picture from the spectral overlap, say, of these two response functions, these two spectral curves corresponding to two different particles, say. Okay? Now, if you employ the same shift to apply the same shift to both of them, you will end up with a shifted response which still has an overlap between the two. This should be clear, right? You started from two overlapping functions, you have shifted both the same way, you still end up with overlapping functions. So you will always end up, if you have try to control n particles by one field, you will always end up with cross decoherence and with asymmetry in their coupling to the fields, okay? So this simply means that you cannot control this number of matrix elements of the decoherence by means of a single spectral function. Okay. If you could, yeah, but that would be difficult if you have many particles that are spectrally shifted relative to each other, because one spectrum that would shift all of them, that would be very hard. That would be very hard. Of course, under the extreme assumption that all are restricted to a relatively narrow spectral band, this could be done, but not otherwise. Okay. This is in principle true. There is no connection between the spectral bandwidth and the number of particles, and if you are able to do that sufficiently fast, then you have no problems. But often this is not the case. Okay. One example is what Frank Wilhelm showed us. They have a spectrum which is 10 gigahertz wide. Okay. To have shifts. Okay. Of that amount is hard, okay? But so this is to show you what happens when you apply a uniform shift. You this is no good. Your fidelity decays quite fast, and the decoherence matrix still has large elements. Red is large, okay? So it has a large elements on the off-diagonal as well as on the diagonal. So what we suggest instead, on the other hand, you cannot impose a decoherence-free subspace for all of them, because we are, again, we are trying to control n squared over two elements. We only have n fields at our disposal. There is no way to ensure, okay, this may happen, but there is no way to ensure that these n conditions give you a decoherence-free subspace. There are too many elements to control. But what we suggest instead is to decouple the particles, okay? And this is relatively straightforward, because you just have to employ sufficiently different spectral shifts for each of the particles, okay? So then the crosstalk stops, okay? One is shifted this way, another is shifted that way. You can do that by n conditions. This is not difficult. In addition to that, within each particle, within each system, you may impose conditions so as to create a decoherence-free subspace, and this is guaranteed. For that, you have to take advantage of what is known as a dark state in optics, okay? Namely, if you have two excited states that decay to a common ground state, you can put those states in an anti-symmetric superposition, okay? Such a superposition, which, provided the decoherence rates of the two are equal, such a superposition will cause destructive interference of the corresponding decay channels. Okay? Okay? This has been used so far only in the context of spontaneous emission. What we advocate is the use of this concept for arbitrary decoherence mechanisms. Now, so for that you need, as I was saying, first employ shifts that would decouple one particle from another, and use two fields per particle in order to compensate for possible differences in the decay or decoherence rates of these two upper levels. Then you will end up effectively with an anti-symmetric superposition. You will have two strongly overlapping curves corresponding to these two channels with pi phase difference between them, and then they will tend to cancel each other and result in very small decoherence rates. And this is irrespective of how broad the spectrum is. Okay? So this is the advantage of such a mechanism as compared to the need to shift very strongly well outside such a curve. Yeah. Yeah. No, qubits. In other words, the qubits are now the antisymmetric state and the ground state. Okay, all right. Those are now your effective qubits, and if you encode your information in this basis, it will be protected against decoherence very well. Here is what you get. Without trying to optimize things very much, this is what happens to the elements of the decoherence matrix. This is for two particles each having two internal levels. They decay quite nicely, the decoherence elements, yes, with time as you employ the right fields. And you see that the decoherence matrix decomposes into two blocks. Okay, blue means that the coherence is very low. Okay, and each block corresponds now to a particle. Okay, particle number, particle A, particle B, to the two state space of that particle, here and here, and they don't have to be the same, okay, because you only try to suppress decoherence within each of them individually. So you don't have to employ extra conditions so that you really equate the rates of decoherence of different particles. You only care about what happens within each particle. And the fidelity is then rather high. Okay, so the interim conclusion is that at least a singly excited n particle multipartite entangled state may always be protected by two n local fields. Okay, and we feel that this can be experimentally verified. I hope to show something in the end. Okay, now, sorry. You are shifting them in different ways. You are thereby decoupling them from each other. There is no crosstalk, no cross decoherence, so you've eliminated all the off-diagonal elements. And for each of them, you use two fields to impose destructive interference internally. Okay? Put the particle in a dark state. Okay. All right. So now, things work fairly similarly for proper dephasing, which is more ubiquitous and more of a problem. Okay, and here are various examples of proper dephasing. Proper dephasing means that decoherence doesn't cause flips between states, just randomizes the relative phase between, say, two states of a qubit. Okay, so the solution to second order in this dephasing, taking into account the resonant control. Remember, we were talking about resonant control in the case of proper dephasing, okay, with this Rabi frequency and this random frequency fluctuation. This is the operator solution to second order in this matrix, and the matrix in the basis, say, of the symmetric and anti-symmetric superpositions of the two qubit states is off diagonal with the random fluctuations delta of t modulated now by this control function epsilon of t, where epsilon is again the exponential of your Rabi oscillations. So when these are fast oscillating frequencies, they tend to average out the effect of this random oscillation, which is in the spirit of dynamical decoupling. Okay. So what you are trying to maximize is either the fidelity for any given state, initial given state, or the average fidelity that we have heard about before. Okay. Now, if you start from a symmetric or anti-symmetric superposition, you end up with a fidelity which decreases like this. What you have here is again the overlap of the dephasing function, which is the cross correlation of the fluctuating frequencies, and this is now your control, yes, the oscillating functions. Okay. Now, typically, this has an exponentially decaying form, but not necessarily. It can be much more complicated than that. But just by way of illustration, if this decays with the, this cross-correlation decays with time tc, this is the non-Markovian or the memory time, the correlation time of the fluctuations, you have to operate with a Rabi frequency which exceeds 1 over tc. Okay, in order to achieve suppression of the dephasing, okay, which again may not always be feasible, yeah. But if you do, then what happens is that you again you shift. This is you now have a Lorentzian spectrum. Yes, the Fourier transform of such an exponential decaying function is a Lorentzian. By employing sufficiently strong driving, you shift to the wings of this Lorentzian spectrum, and the farther you are, the higher your, say, average fidelity is. This is what happens when this is, say, 10 times higher than 1 over the correlation time. Okay? Fine. Good. So you can extend this to a multi-qubit situation, just like you did before. Again, you have correlated dephasing now, okay? You cannot treat dephasing independently. You can employ M fields to control these M qubits, but you now have to deal with a 2 by M 2 to the m by 2 to the m power matrix describing the overall decoherence, and this is again uncontrollable by m fields. Okay, so again you can employ the same trick. You can decouple particles, and this is quite easy in the case of resonant control. All you have to do is address each of them by a different magnitude of the field, a different Rabi frequency. See, the cross dephasing when the Rabi frequencies are equal is like that, but when one Rabi frequency is much larger than the other, it drops off very fast, okay? So just by driving them at very different rates, they decouple, okay? And then cross-dephasing is eliminated. And then you can, again, create a decoherence-free subspace either by employing two internal levels in a particle, just like before, or if you like, by taking two qubits and putting them in a singlet state, because in a singlet state you have again destructive interference between two channels, right? You see here there are four terms of the fidelity function corresponding to dephasing of either the first or the second qubit, but you have the cross dephasing terms which have different signs than the single qubit dephasing terms. They are governed by this cross dephasing function. For these two qubits could be, for example, two adjacent qubits. And so, in fact, in this case, if you want to end up with a decoherence-free subspace, you have to make sure that all these terms are equal to each other in absolute value. Then they will just cancel each other. Yes, you have minus, plus, plus, minus. They, if you take care that they are all equal by choosing these functions appropriately, you are then you end up in a decoherent free subspace. Okay. Now, in the remaining 3 minutes, I would like to say that all this is compatible in principle with gate operations, yes, in case you may worry about that, because you may work in a Bell state basis for 2 qubits, and then suppose that your task is to perform a swap gate, yes, which acts in the plane of these 2 Bell states. Okay, you can do it, say, by employing a Raman pulse, which goes through some intermediate state. The trick is that simultaneously with this pulse, which affects the gate, you employ another pulse, which acts on different transitions and addresses the 2 other Bell states. Okay, and the sole purpose of this pulse is to suppress dephasing. Yes, by modulating the system sufficiently fast. All right, and since these pulses act on different transitions, they don't interfere with each other. You end up then with an off-diagonal decoherence matrix in this basis of Bell states, in which you can you have 4 elements and you can control each of them by employing the appropriate pulse. And let me show you what that means. Graphically, this means that you are employing a sequence of pulses, each changing the phase just slightly on a time scale which is faster than the dephasing time scale, the time scale on which the block vector starts wobbling, okay? And you, this is good, and you have thereby completed the task. Instead of employing just a constant field for a duration T, you have employed a more complicated pulse structure, which is tailored to the dephasing spectrum that you have. And you do that individually for each pair of qubits, because the dephasing spectrum for qubits A and B may be quite different from the dephasing spectrum for qubits C and D. And the only requirement for compatibility with the gate operation is that the overall phase which you accumulate during in the course of the operation is the same phase for all, in this case, for all 4 Bell states, yes? So you put a constraint on your pulses, you shape your pulses as you like, okay? But you take care that their overall area, yes, summed over the entire sequence of pulses, gives you the same phase, say, in the case of a swap gate, this would be pi over 2, okay? So all Bell states will end up having an extra phase of pi over 2, okay? So this is just a numerical example that indeed such a sequence of pulses gives you much better results in terms of the fidelity or the purity than just activating a gate by means of a constant field. It's this black curve. See, fidelity can be much poorer there than this blue curve, which is a sequence of pulses, each changing the phase just slightly. Okay? All right. So this is the experimental setup that we are discussing with experimentalists. It would contain a number of ions, say, in a cavity. The goal would be to put these ions into dark states of, say, 2 hyperfine states, 1 and 2. The ions would be addressable spectrally, according to their position, because you employ a magnetic field gradient that shifts their hyperfine or Zeeman states differently according to their position. And once you have separated them in frequency, you can address them by means of pulses. This is definitely a realistic goal. If you have, say, 10 ions, you need 10 control fields for the first part of the talk where I discussed the protection of a singly excited multipartite state. If you want to perform gate operations between any pair of qubits. And we have now pulse shapers that can deliver up to 250 or whatever in tailored pulses. So this is the conclusion. Local modulations can, with spectral addressability, can create a multipartite decoherence-free subspace, which consists of decoupled particles, despite asymmetric or cross-coupling to the bath. You could enhance thereby gate fidelity by choosing your control fields appropriately. And the great advantage of this approach is that normally, given the spectral line shape of your decoherence or dephasing spectrum, you can immediately guess what the spectrum of the control fields is. You don't need to do almost any calculation. So the trade-off is that instead of using ancilla, you would be using this number of control fields. Thank you very much.